Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm AD Packham and we are broadcasting to the world in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, it's been a good week on Planet Albion. First, last Saturday, we followed up the win against Chelsea with a win on the road at Wolves. And then on Wednesday, we came from behind to knock league leaders Arsenal out of the Carabao Cup and book our face in the place in the fourth round. It is our face. It's going to be in the fourth round. It was also the third win in a row under Robert De Zerbi, in which we scored an impressive 10 goals. But have we put the Brighton XG moniker behind us? Let's hope so, as we head into Sunday's final game before the World Cup break with Aston Villa, the visitors to the Amex. Villa themselves have a new manager with former Arsenal boss Unai Emery at the helm, and they will be looking to follow up last weekend's first win over Manchester United in 37 years with the first away win of the season. In other news, it surely came as no surprise that Gareth Southgate didn't name a single Albion player in his 26-man squad for that football tournament thing that starts soon. Joining me today to discuss all of this and more is Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Sussex Live's Brighton correspondent Richie Mills, and also a man who needs no introduction, so we're just going to call him John, or John Bain, also known as Attila the Stockbroker. Well, it's been a good week. Welcome back to the show, guys. Lovely to see you.
Yeah, thanks. Hello. Yeah.
Can I just quickly say that there is nothing good about Qatar, the country, or the stuff that I've got on my chest. So if I sound a bit croaky, I do apologise.
I know. I mean, we're going to try not to talk about it, but we've got to talk about it a little bit. Well, we'll come to that towards the end. But I mean, it's been a good week. The plaudits are coming Albion's way from anyone who's knows a thing or two about football, it seems. And apparently, Rich, we're now the great entertainers.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with any of that. I think in terms of, you know, going to the league leaders, Arsenal, and beat them on their own patch, coming from behind, but just the strength and depth that Brighton have is really remarkable. You know, Brighton made 8 changes, but pretty much everyone said they deserve to win, and you know they keep having these fantastic players and finds like Kara Matoma, and there's potentially others in the wings as well. Everything is looking pretty rosy.
Yeah. Now, John, I mean, Wolves has always been a happy hunting ground for us, pretty much. But it was you know, we had to come from behind in that game to get something out of it.
Yeah, I mean, I was there. It was lovely. It was really good. We played well. Obviously, I mean, Matoma is an absolute revelation. Of the two, obviously, we've got the two from USG, and I was already told by the people I know at USG, that's Union Saint-Gilloise, for those who don't know, but UNDAF was a fairly bollocks version of Mopay, and we should have signed Dante Vonzi, the other one, the other striker, and that Matoma would be absolutely brilliant. I'm not going to pass any comments so far on UNDAF because we haven't been able to see him properly, and he has a huge stats record, but it has been against SV Meppen. It has been for SV Meppen in the German third division and in the Jupiler League, which is nearly as bad as the horrible urine of the same name. But Mitoma for certainly is brilliant. And we played very well. Obviously, Mitoma did the business getting the players sent off. Well, didn't. I mean, the player got himself sent off with an awful tackle. But he really does look, he's an extra. He's another one that has just come out of nowhere and is just great.
OK, John, well, we're going to come to that incident very shortly. But first, the team news from the Wolves game was that, unsurprisingly, perhaps we were unchanged, but the bench looked a lot stronger with Welbeck, Veltman and Colbert all returning to the bench. It was a bright start from us. And Adam Lallana is probably the talking point of the game, because this was the Adam Lallana that we probably wanted to see for quite a long time. We know how influential he is behind the scenes, and on the pitch he can be a little bit broken at times. But this, he was just sparkling in this game, John.
Best game I've ever seen him play for Brighton, definitely.
But for the fact we've got picked up a couple of players who are notorious for being sick notes, for forever spending their time on the hospital bed, in Adam Lallana and Danny Welbeck, we've got an awful lot of good quality time out of them, which leads me to believe that the likes of Liverpool, Arsenal, England just don't have the, you know, the sophisticated medical facilities that we have at Brighton, you know. And when we're talking about sort of people who can pick up a heart problem before it becomes a problem, we're talking about, you know, a team that can keep Welbeck going. I mean, this is probably his most consistent run in his career. Lallana, when he's on form, when he can play, he is a great, great player. You know, that, that old notion of doing your talking on the pitch, and this is a fellow who does a lot of talking on the pitch, but you'd rather it was with his feet. And I still think that even at 34, we've still yet to see the best of him, which is actually quite an exciting prospect. But AD, I just want to pick up something that I want to go back to the previous week, actually. And I do feel I've always wanted to say this on the show. You know, we've won the, you know, we've won this game. We played brilliantly, and John will fill us in, and Richard will fill us in about what happened. But this is all on the back of a brilliant win against Chelsea. There's a huge amount of schadenfreude going on here, and I just feel now, and no one else has to feel the same about this, you know, because how long are we going to keep this going? But Graham Potter was a great, great manager for us. There is no denying that. But the schadenfreude, the sort of like the continuous knocks that we're now having about him, for me, are getting a little boring and they're getting a little tedious. I would rather we focus on our club rather than worrying about someone else's or how basically an ex is getting on. And if we can focus on
pretty much sums it up.
Sorry?
That pretty much sums it up, how an ex is getting on. That is the way. I mean, it does like seeing you. I mean, it's like seeing your ex with somebody else is the way it's been described many times.
And the
times.
Ex is not the best thing for them. But...
And I mean, and just to draw a line under it, really, I mean, I don't think any of us are surprised to see how quickly that the Chelsea fans have turned on Graham. But I mean, apart from last week and of the with the Chelsea game, I mean, John, he's arguably the greatest Albion manager of all time.
Yeah, he is. I would say he's the greatest manager we've ever had. I'd also say that Chelsea, the reason I was so disgusted was it was Chelsea. I thought he would go one day, but a horrible plastic club grown fat and rich on the back of money stolen from the Soviet people, whose fans are so plastic that they've actually got made in Hong Kong stitched into the back of their shirts. That was the thing for me, really. I mean, if it had been Barcelona or Liverpool or whatever, I'd have gone, yeah, fair enough. And the fact that he took the backroom staff and that they want Win Stanley and they're probably going to want Caicedo and Trossard, although we don't know about that. But I mean, yeah, I mean, I it's very interesting, actually, because I think you know that I did quite a lot of public pronouncements about this and about the nature. It's not about Chelsea. It's about modern football. It's about the way that the game operates now. It's about the way that money, you could be, we are known now as a brilliantly clever, creative club in terms of what we do off the pitch, in terms of the recruitment, you know, everything is absolutely fantastic. And money, just loads and loads of money can just come and go and say, right, I want that. That's what, and it sickens me to my core. And I wrote a lot about this and the postscript is quite amusing. Because I wrote a lot about it on my social media pages and I put a bit up on North Stand Chat and I sent it to Paul Camelin and Paul Barber. And the upshot of it is that Paul Barber has invited me to be his guest in the boardroom on
Good
Sunday.
Good grief.
And he said some, we had a long discussion. We had a discussion on email where he basically said the kind of thing that he normally says, but at the end of it, he said some really nice things about me and invited me to be his guest in the boardroom on Sunday. So I'm going, and obviously I'm going to talk to them about the what you see that I've got. If you can just give me 2 minutes, I'm going to give you my idea of where the club is now in terms of its strategy. It seems to me that now we have this wonderful training facility. We're obviously a club that is now getting known, even in the more clueless parts of the football world, as a gateway to the Premier League. And I think what they're saying now is to all the agents, all the greedy agents, all the corporate wazzocks everywhere throughout the world. Right, okay, agents, if you think you've got a young player who can make it in the Premier League, we are your window to the Premier League. If you send him to Brighton, we will give him wonderful opportunities. He will have amazing training facilities. He will get in the team if he's good enough very quickly. And if he makes a huge impact very quickly and the great big clubs with all the money come sniffing, he will be the subject of a bidding war conducted by Tony Bloom, who's probably the best person to do that in the world, you will make a load of money. Your player will go somewhere else. And obviously, you know, so in other words, we are your window. Come to Brighton. If you, any, all young players everywhere, if you, you know, if you want to prove yourselves in the Premier League, come to us.
Yeah.
And, and so therefore, if I could just finish with this, because it's, for me, that is a kind of, it's a very interesting strategy, because what that means is that we have a constant turnover. And in terms of actually, and it's interesting because what Paul Barber said, of course, you know, I said about the glass ceiling. Now everything we do now, we're just going to get nicked off us. And he said, no, that, we're going to talk about it on Sunday. Obviously, my feeling now is that this is just my idea. I have no idea whether it's true, but I'm going to ask them, is that what they're going to try and do is basically, it's a race between how good the players get and how quickly they go. So we will have brilliant footballers come and we may well win something or get into Europe in the next few years. On the other hand, we won't have the normal kind of thing that you'd like to try and have as a football fan, which is a team which is obviously committed through and through to Brighton over. What I would like to see is players who actually want to play for Brighton and aren't bothered to go to, you know, Barcelona or Liverpool or bloody Chelsea, but actually want to play for us. And my big question is, why is there no independent football scene? Like there is an independent music scene. In my world, there are loads of people who could have been a lot more famous and earned a lot more money, but I just say, no, I'm happy where I am. I want to do what I want. And I have to say, I'm one of them. I've always loved what I do. I've never wanted to be, and I have had some opportunities, I never wanted to be kind of a rich celebrity. I loathe that culture. I'm awkward DIY. It's in my genes. Why is there nothing like that in football? I want. Anyway, that's me. Shut up. Give me 10 minutes.
I'll have 10 minutes off now. No. It's the interesting the metaphor you use there. I mean, I do like to consider it as a sort of like we've built the house, and Chelsea just come along and nick the roofing.
Yeah. You know, and the lead piping.
And the lead piping. Well, I mean, Richie.
They've nicked our fish and the rod that we used to catch them with.
Yeah, Richie. I mean, obviously, you go to the presses, you sit in the press room. What's do you get a kind of a feeling as that what John's saying and what is along the lines of what the club are feeling?
I definitely feel that there's a sense that, you know, it's a very progressive club and this is a very good pathway. But I do feel that there is, like, as John said, the last ceiling. And I think going back to his point, I just don't know if there is sort of an independent look at this. I just think there's just so much money in the sport. I mean, I could be misconstruing the point that you're saying, so apologies for that. But I just feel that there's just so much money in the game. And because there's the sort of the top six, and so they're just getting more and more money, the gap is going to widen and widen. And then there's almost a sense of apathy amongst some of the other fans, because it's just about safety for so many. And then the ones that break the mold, like a Brighton, are just not obviously asset stripped, but they are sort of taken away bit
very
by bit. And,
I mean, I mean, you've got that, but then you've got people like Lewis Dunk, who he has had opportunities to leave the club, but he has stayed, and he's a local lad.
He's a one off, isn't he?
He is a one-off, but, but for every look, but I mean,
he's and Lewis Dunk.
But I mean, you know, we've got
Martin Noble,
but we've got
absolutely.
He's a beacon to those coming through in the academy, particularly those that are local. What you can achieve. I mean, it's unfortunate that he's not going to the toilet, also known as the World Cup, the WC, the water closet.
We get that.
It's
skip a bit, brother.
But it's you know, he's what we should be attaining to, and then basically he is the shining light that is Brighton Hove Albion on the pitch. And I mean, John, just to play devil's advocate with what you were saying, I do agree. But you know, we want to hang on to these players. We don't want to sell them. And you know, at some point, I mean, we don't want to be. We don't want to hold them to ransom, but I don't see why we have to say no.
Well, I mean, I don't see why we can't be a big club now. Who decides who's a little club and who's a big club? Why is Brighton, one of the most famous, progressive, interesting cultural centres of the world, arguably more interesting than some of the places that are deemed to be big, You know, why can we not now, having, because my attitude is we've come from bottom of the fourth division with no ground to this. Why can't we go even higher?
We can't generate the funding.
The thing for me is I am not satisfied now with the glass ceiling and knowing that for the rest of my life, I'm going to watch my team finish between 9th and 17th in the Premier League. That is not good enough. That is not good enough for me. I said this, in all my stuff. If someone like me, who spent all the years that I did, not bigging myself up, fighting to save the club, feels like this when we're fifth in the Premier League, wherever it is, then football is sick.
In that case, John, do you feel here and now, even a third of the way into this season, still our best ever season so far, that we are a top six club?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do.
Not only on the pitch.
Why? I think we're playing beautiful football. Obviously, Manchester City are definitely better. But of all the other teams, we'll match any of them. And we've proved it not just once, but many, many times. I don't see why we can't just say from now on, have the wonderful training facilities, whatever, and do all the other stuff that I said. But say to people, if you come to Brighton, we will expect you to fulfil your contract.
Yeah.
Now, I've got no problem when Trossard goes, and he will go, obviously. He will go on a free at the end of the season.
I'm not so sure he will, you know.
He won't go on a free at the end of the season because we've extended the contract. So
Okay. We've got, if Trossard decides to go, and I suspect he will, although it's not definite, if he decides to go, I will bear him no ill will whatsoever. He's been a brilliant servant. We've developed him. He came from Kent. He was obviously well respected there. He's come on leaps and bounds. He's improved every year. He's given 100%. If he wants to go somewhere else, then it'll be sad because we need strikers. But, you know, OK. But he has fulfilled his contract. And that is what I would like to see players do. I don't think it's right.
OK. Well, John, I mean, I was going to bring this up later, but I'll do it now. Well, I'll probably do it later as well, no, isn't it? But it's, look, your job as a football club, whether you're from playing on park football on a Sunday to the Premier League, your job as a football club is to be as successful as you possibly can. And by that, I mean by winning games, by winning trophies. Coming fourth isn't winning a trophy. Winning the League Cup, winning the Papa John's, that's winning a trophy. You know, that's what we should be attaining to. And, you know, that is your job, your ultimate job as a football club, is to try and be successful and to win things. And, you know, we went out at Arsenal, to Arsenal last night, and we put out, okay, we did give a few people a chance, but that was a really strong team we put out there.
Brilliant performance.
And, you know, Arsenal, they made 11 changes. Sorry, 10 changes. So, you know,
it just goes to show that Brighton's second team is better than Arsenal's second team.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, but we're taking this seriously. I mean, I don't want to say we're safe because I'm a Brighton fan, and but we're looking like we're doing all right. We're not looking at the trapdoor at the moment. So let's take these things seriously. Let's get ourselves to a cup final and let's try and win this flipping thing.
Yeah, before we die, before we all die, I'd like to go, and I'm older than the rest of you, I'd like to go to Europe once. I'd like to be able to organise some gigs around fixtures in Europe. I'd be interested in trying to get a gig in Latvia or Lithuania or somewhere. I am not disagreeing with the strategy. If that's the strategy, it's an incredibly clever strategy. And I'm certainly not saying that it isn't possible that with the strategy of the revolving door, we couldn't win things. Because some of the players, if they know they're about to win something, will go, hang on a minute, if I go to Man City or bloody blah, I'm going to be sitting on the bench half the time. Here, I'm a bloody star and a hero.
Well, this is the point. Hang on, this is the point. Bissouma and Cucurella should be, as brilliant as they have been for us, they should be cautionary tales for other players at the club who are looking for moves elsewhere, looking for a move upstairs somewhere to, say, Liverpool or Arsenal, wherever. I mean, Ben White is probably an exception to all those that we have sold because he's actually come on leaps and bounds and he's going to Qatar. Good for him. But Cucurella and Bissouma are cautionary tales along the lines of, yeah, you've done well for Brighton, but you're bench warmers, you're getting pelters, you're not, you know, life is not quite the bowl of cherries that it was at Brighton. And Trossard might look at that again, and Caicedo might look at that again. You know, which of those players really wants to go to a basket case club where, frankly, you're going to be on the front pages as much as you are the back pages? Whereas, as you pointed out, this is a professional football club where, and also it's important that they just don't believe the hype that their agents keep foisting upon them, this toxic, constant narrative that they're going to have belted into their eardrums along the lines of, I can get you this, I can get you that, we, you know, you should be playing for this, I can get treble your wages, blah, blah, blah. And they don't have the fulfilling career that they wanted to. And this is where I think probably Lewis Dunk got to realise the limit of his capabilities or the limit of his ambitions, and is now going to retire, as you know, assuming that he carries on the way he is. And I want to bring you in here, Richie. Lewis Dunk has every possibility of retiring in 5 or 6 years' time as a Brighton legend.
Yeah, and hopefully he can be that example. But I think just with him, obviously he came through the ranks, so you might be able to get someone if they born and bred or whatever. That might be it's more likely that they'll stay at a club for a longer time. And I think him and others are becoming few and far between, sadly. But I mean, just in terms of even in academies these days, they get players from much further afield. They buy in late, and then they say this is part of the academy. This is maybe me just being a bit despondent, but I personally don't like some things of where the game is going. But so more power to the likes of Lewis Dunk and co.
Yeah, moving on. I can't believe we got. I don't know how we got onto this from Adam Lallana, but that's where we were. So,
can we talk about the game again?
It was a beautiful goal from Adam and a fantastic performance. But Wolves did equalise very quickly. It was a very soft goal to concede, Richie.
Yeah, it was a weird one because I spoke to Lewis Dunk after the game, and he said that there was sort of a period of 20 minutes in the first half that was maybe the best that they played under De Zerbi, which I was actually quite surprised by because I thought the first 20 or so minutes against Liverpool was unbelievable. But either way, and obviously Chelsea was fantastic as well. But it was, they played very, very well in the first 10 minutes, and then somehow they were 2-1 down out of the blue. I think with the equaliser, Estupiñán was pulled out of position, and then he tried to sort of do a an intercept further up the pitch, and then Matoma was caught out as well, and then he basically just ran on through on goal. And then obviously the penalty, Dunk said he really did graze his arm, but these days that those things get given. But just fast forward a little bit, I thought the impact of Matoma in the just before half time to get the equaliser, and then the red card. He did well to shoulder off that rugby tackle. That was pretty key.
Okay, let's talk about
Matoma is a lucky boy in that game. A lucky boy. Because he had a couple of nibbles. Who scored the Wolves equaliser? Guedes. He's a lucky boy because he had a couple of nibbles and it nearly knocked him over. And if he'd have gone over, it would have been a penalty and Matoma would have got a red card. Really, you think? Hang on, would it have denied an opposite goal scoring opportunity? Well, given that he did score, yes, it would. So he was lucky with that, and I don't think he even got a yellow card for because obviously he played on, so there was no foul given.
I don't think he made a tackle. I think he was he didn't know what to do. He's looking at Lewis Dunk, who was covering, and he didn't quite. Lewis should have been across a lot quicker.
Mitoma's defensive skills are not really there for all to see.
Yeah, I thought he was a little bit naive there, and I think that
he
could have made a little bit of a tackle. But I thought the thing you were going to say is that if he'd got a yellow card for that, he should have got a yellow card for his reaction after.
Lies the point, because he was allowed to, the Wolves player was allowed to play on and score. No foul was given, so there's obviously no yellow card. So when it comes to the second one of the rugby tackle, and unbelievably, we've got people on social media querying this. I mean, I read what Ian Hart wrote about it, and he likens it to sort of rolling around on the ground or even spitting. The whole thing of the imaginary yellow card, it is a cautionable offence, and you don't do it. I mean, one, it's sort of gamesmanship. There's just these certain things that you have that are there are one or two sort of gentlemen's rules left in football these days, and that is one of them. It was again something that was imported. You wave, and I mean, it was so manic. I thought his wrist was going to come off.
I wonder what he was doing then. Actually,
The justification. The justification. People.
Right.
Did you think he was turning Japanese, John?
I don't know what he was doing. What's he doing? What's that? What's that about? Of course, it hadn't occurred to me. He was actually asking for the player to get a card, wasn't he?
Yeah. And you don't do that. And the people saying, "Oh, hang on, he was rugby tackled. He's every right to do that." No, it's a cautionable offence. You don't, you know, it's he's English is poor. He's only just come to this country. Hang on, he's played in Japan. He's played in England. He knows the laws. Those laws are there. He's a Japan international. He knows not to do it. Okay. And I'd like to think that someone has had a quiet word with him and saying, "Caro, don't do it again."
Richie, your thoughts?
Yeah, I noticed that straight away because I was lucky enough to go to the game and I didn't. He was straight up, you know, motioning to the referee and hopefully, as Anne said, someone can say no, that's not the thing. But unfortunately, that is more commonplace these days with much of the game, sadly.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean,
can I just say, great rugby tackle. Superb.
It was terrible. Like
was good. It was brilliant.
The thing that gets me was, I mean, it went to VAR because if Carew was offside, it was double jeopardy. He would have got away with it. I mean, surely serious foul play is serious foul play.
Not if the thing, if it's offside. Yeah, I know. It's just one of the ironies of it, isn't it? Well, let's put it this way. If Matoma had scored and it was offside, it wouldn't have been allowed. So same scenario.
I guess. Okay. I mean, we did go on. I mean, obviously, that we played the second half. They were down to 10 men and it was always going to be hard. I mean, there was a couple of points I just wanted to point out before we move on. March's brilliant ball retrieval and shot, which I thought was unlucky. I don't think he's going to score. I mean, at some point, Solly's going to score this season. And I mean, it's becoming the Adam Lallana joke now. Lallana scored. But also, I mean, Rob Sanchez, he also had some work to do. Has Rob Sanchez ever actually saved the penalty for the Albion? I don't think he has.
There's a request to our listener. If you're out there in reverb land, could you let us know? One doesn't spring to mind, but no, he has saved one.
But
Stockdale, I think, is still our greatest ever penalty saver, isn't he?
I think John Keeley was pretty good. John?
Yeah. But nothing like as good as Paul Cooper for Ipswich Town.
No. But Pascal Gross, he did come up with a winner, John, and it was brilliant work from Matoma again.
Yeah, it was the last 2 minutes, obviously, we laid siege to them, and I always thought we were going to win, frankly. I mean, when I'm away games especially, I don't always think that, but I thought we're going to win this at some point because Wolves weren't actually very good. And when they set on, when they had Adama Traore playing centre forward because all their forwards were injured. And he's many things, but he's not a centre forward. He's a winger, and he's like Akinbayo Akinfoma or whatever his name is on speed, that bloke. I thought we'd win. And of course, in the end, we got it, and that was great. It was good. I mean, we deserved to win ultimately. And I had a really good gig afterwards in the Banks's Brewery Tap, the Clarendon, in Wolverhampton City Centre. So, yeah, brilliant.
Fantastic.
Good day.
Okay, well, let's move on with it. And you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. As ever, this show is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And we have an absolute beauty for you this week. And who'd like to have a go in this one? Richie.
Second time, sorry, still a bit of a noob. Okay, so it's vertical red and yellow stripes. Can I say the sponsor in the
middle? Yes, you can.
Yes. Hitachi and also an Adidas logo with a nice big collar.
Yeah.
It is your classic trefoil sleeves there. There is absolutely no badge whatsoever. It's almost as if this is a template with Hitachi sort of sewn into it because there is no badge whatsoever. In fact, and actually, this is where I bring you in, John. When you sponsored Southwick for a season with your logo on there. That was kind of an interesting project to do, I suppose, that there we were buying these blanks up and then just sort of sticking them over, everything on it. And then by the time we finished, we got a bona fide football kit. It's bizarre how these things are put together, isn't it?
It is, absolutely, yeah. I mean, that worked. It's just saying what happened to Southwick, but it's not the time to talk about it now. The only one that occurred to me was the obvious one, really, which is Valencia, because, I mean, that's the colours they play in. I've got no other idea, so I'm just going to say Valencia.
The only other club I can think of is in red and yellow stripes, red and yellow, is Melchester Rovers. That's Roy Race's team, right, Roy Rovers. Yeah.
When I first saw it, I thought it was Galatasaray, but I was wrong as well. But
because there's no badge, mate. Absolutely no idea.
Well, this is what Phil has to say. It's quite a wordy one, so wish me luck. No photoshopping today, he says. This shirt doesn't have a team badge, so you and your guests will need to know their club colours and sponsors for this one. It is the 1990-91 home shirt of Unión Sportiva Lecce, who play in Serie A in Italy. Lecce are known by a few nicknames. So how is your Italian? He asks. It's terrible, Phil. The first one is Il Giallorosso, yellow and red. Il Lupi, the wolves, snigger. Il Salenti, the Salentians, the region of Italy from where they hail. And I Prapicra, which is the Paprikans, funnily enough. The side was formed in 1908 and they play at the Stadio Valdemare, which currently has a capacity of 31,553. It should be over 40,000, but some areas of the ground have been temporarily closed for improvement works. Lecce are a bit of a yo-yo side, spending most of their history in the top two divisions. Their highest finish was ninth in 1989. Guillermo Giacomozzi holds the record for the most appearances for the Wolves in Serie A. The Uruguayan played 273 league games between 2001 and 2014. And another Uruguayan, Javier Chavanton, holds the record for the most Serie A goals scored, with 47 scored between 2001 and 2004, and another 6 scored in 2012. South America has clearly been a good recruiting ground for him, with Argentinian World Cup 86 winner Pedro Pasquale making over 210 appearances and scoring more than 50 times for Lecce between 95 and 92. Dar factum, Pedro finished his career playing at Bangor City in North Wales, where he is now the club's technical secretary. Linked to the UK, Deli Dicchio played 10 times for Lecce in 97. Former Chelsea and current Spurs manager Antonio Conte began his career at Lecce, playing 81 times before his move to Juventus. Jorge Popescu spent a season with Spurs in 94, but he also played half a season at Lecce in 2002. No links to good links between the Albion and Lecce. The only one that Phil could find is former Brighton under 23 player Matthias Norman spent 2017 to 2019 in our reserve team before moving to Rostov, where he went on loan to Norwich last season. He joined Lecce at the beginning of this season. Before the ink was dry on the contract, Lecce announced that due to the bureaucratic reasons, he would not be involved with the team, and he has subsequently signed for Dynamo Moscow. Thank you.
Can I just interrupt and say that a small part of that is completely incorrect?
Oh, good.
Because 3 weeks ago, I think it was, I've done 7 gigs in Wales in the last few weeks. 3 weeks ago, I was watching Bangor 1876, which is the Phoenix Club formed after Bangor City were destroyed by the kind of people that tried to do what they did to our club. And I'm not saying anything could be legally controversial. The people, like the man in question that you mentioned there, were involved with Bangor City at the time that it fell apart. Bangor City no longer exists. The Phoenix Club is called Bangor 1876, and it's currently in the third division of the Welsh League, the Welsh League system. But playing, I saw them play. Actually played Brickfield, which I know nothing of apart from as a song by the Boys, Brickfield Knights, but it's a part of Wrexham. And they won 6-0 and were ridiculously too good for the level they're playing at, in front of about 400 spectators. So you can tell, Phil, that the Bangor City no longer exists, sadly.
You've just told him. You just told him.
I did say
he will be listening. Anyway,
there you go.
We went to Arsenal and we won. Yay, go team. Eight changes to the side that beat Wolves. But it was a strong, real strong side. And it was nice to see Tarek Lamptey get a start. Levi Colwell, who I thought was brilliant. Lee Steele, Jeremy Sarmiento, Masito and Billy Gilmore also got starts. Veltman and Welbeck also returned to the starting lineup. So, Richard,
I'm gonna let the others carry this for a second. Can I just say this is a genuine thing that I had? You can't prove it, and it's easy to be wise after the event, but this is genuinely the case. I really, really fancied our chances before the game. We've got a good record against Arsenal. They weren't going to take it too seriously. It was our second side against their second side, and our second side, especially with just those eight changes you've mentioned there, AD, are pretty reasonable first team players. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm delighted it happened, but it wasn't a total shock for me. And therein lies a point that we were talking about earlier about how good this club is and how we should fear so few people. It wasn't a shock. It wasn't a, oh my God, we've done it.
Yeah, I mean, Richie, I mean, this is, what Al says there is very true. We go into these games against the so-called bigger sides, the greedy six, as we like to call them. we go into those games with no fear, and this was no different.
Yeah, I think also what was great was that so often in the past, there's a little bit of a slight dig at Brighton because they always say the other big team didn't play that well. It was more about the lack of skill from their part than the actual, you know.
That drives me round the twist, that does.
Exactly. So, but this was a game when Arsenal, they didn't play badly at all. I mean, their first goal from Nketiah, that was a lovely quick move.
And should it have been a foul, though? Should it have been a foul earlier in the move?
Maybe. I mean, The main point is that they weren't like having an off day. They were playing some good stuff. Nelson and Nketiah looked very good. They had a number of good chances. Steele looked a bit shaky in goal at the start, but then grew into the game. But they had 22 shots and 57% possession. They had plenty of opportunities to put the Brighton away, but Brighton were really, really clinical. And earlier to your point about the XG tag, you know, Brighton were you know, there was no profligacy issues at all. And also just in terms of, you know, what I liked about it was that De Zerbi brought on Grosson at the start of the second half because I thought Caicedo had a bit of an off night and he shored up the defence a bit and gave them a bit more stability in that park and that allowed Gilmore to play a bit more freely. And then Matoma was fantastic off the bench. But also just in terms of the young players, Enciso and Sarmiento were very good. I think there's just so many positives.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to see Billy Gilmore actually get some 90 minutes on the pitch as well. I mean, why are your thoughts on him, Richie? Because, I mean, he's a player that's got, he's got a decent pedigree. He's just got to bide his time, hasn't he, really?
Yeah, but I think the problem is that Caicedo is fantastic and McAllister's in the form of his life and only seemingly getting better. So the bar to sort of get into this team is getting higher and higher and higher. And that's obviously testament to the work that's going on at Brighton and the coach in there. But yeah, I think it seems like maybe an injury or a complete change in the system will really allow him to get some game time.
Now, John, I've got written down here, Enciso is fun, isn't he?
Enciso.
Enciso, yeah.
At 18... obviously like shooting and is very direct and looks incredibly, incredibly good. Again, hats off to the recruiters and everyone involved at the club. If we can go from one extreme to the other in 25 years, we've done it. I mean, it is just amazing. And the fact that for whatever reason, and I think I probably found the reason, I discussed this on Sunday, but forever, whatever reason, everybody wants to come to Brighton. And we are picking up some absolute gems. And he's another one who is obviously very, very soon going to have all the big sharks sort of say, we want that one. Cherry pick again. You know, we want that one. So we go back to what I said earlier, which I won't bother obviously to say again because there's no need. But yeah, and I would say Enciso, I think he'll be in the starting lineup very soon. And the wonderful thing is, the project is beginning to look as though if it is what it is, then we are in a situation where if one or two of these do go, in January or whenever, we have people to step up to the plate who are excellent. And I mean, you look at it in terms of the strength in depth. When somebody my mates from Leyton Orient really rated, his name has just gone out of my head.
Alzate.
And he's gone to Standard Liège, isn't doing particularly well there, so it seems so far. I mean, and you know, a couple of years ago, I was thinking he was one of the greatest young prospects we've got. But the standard, the level of recruitment is just phenomenal at the moment. And when you hear, I mean, I heard either it was Lineker or one of them when I was watching the Match of the Day review of the last game, saying, you know, Brighton keep coming up with these players that we've never heard of. That was it. That was absolutely, because all I ever said when Potter went is, I really hope our next manager is someone we've never heard of, because that's what we want. I mean, I want Brighton to constantly be getting players and managers who we've never heard of for the rest of my life, because that is the way. I mean, because that just shows how absolutely brilliant the system is. If we get players that no one else has heard about, then it means that our recruitment system is better than everyone else's. That is self-evident.
In other words, my little black book is bigger than yours, Sunshine.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I must admit, I mean, De Zerbi wasn't particularly on my radar before he came. Richie, did you know much about him?
Nope.
There you go. Good answer.
Yeah. The fact that they're unknowns, I think, ought to be neither here nor there. I think all it does, certainly from possibly the player's point of view, certainly from possibly the club's point of view, is it relieves a certain level of pressure. Because if you've got someone who's come from England or has been a high-level name in France, one, we couldn't afford them. And this is the point, and I'm going back to something John said earlier about sort of how we run ourselves as a business model. And yet we are still, you know, he said, why can't we be one of the big clubs? Well, we just don't actually have the levels of income and support. You know, when bearing in mind that we've only been a Premier League team for five, this is our sixth year. And there are still sort of, you know, five, six, seven, eight teams who have been in the Premier League for every year of its existence and have therefore managed to get up their resources to such a level that it's a worldwide phenomenon. You know, we can beat Liverpool, we can beat Chelsea, but can we compete with their fan base or the size of their worldwide fan base? Not a bit of it. Even Leicester City, when they won the Premier League, yeah, they were massive in Thailand, obviously, but they just didn't gain the traction that they could have done because they're not one of those big six clubs. We're back to Agnelli at Juventus, who was raging when Leicester City won the Premier League. Not good way, bad way. He said, who are Leicester City? They don't bring in the money. Now, that is a disgusting way of looking at it. But the point is that come the day that, ha, 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 we ever win the Premier League, it doesn't make us necessarily one of the country's big hitters. On the pitch, yes. Off the pitch is a different concept completely.
I don't rule out the fact that we can't ever win the Premier League. Because
hypothetical. There's the point I was making there.
How sure are we that Bloom isn't so wealthy that he can compete with all these people?
Because in order for a club to be sustainable, it's got to be working on it. And we're looking at, when we're talking about the bigger clubs, we're talking about all of them with stadiums twice the size of the Amex. We'd have to find another stadium that can have 60,000 people holding it. And is that fan base there? At the moment, we're peaking, but it's got to be sustainable for 10, 15, 20 years before we get a fan base that we know can fill a stadium with 55,000 people.
Just before you start, I mean, Richie, you've got to shoot off. So thank you to Richie for joining us. Just before we go, Arsenal couldn't quite cope with our quick passing, could they?
Nope. And I thought, just really quickly, what was great was that their heads really dropped off the second goal and it only looked like it was going to be one team who was going to win the game off that. And then Brighton, well, took their goal. And I was really happy for Lamptey to get his first goal in 2 years. Obviously, he's had a very tough time with injuries. So, yeah, delighted. And bring on the next team.
Was his previous goal in North London as well?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, taking him away.
And have you ever heard of a song called Big in Japan?
No.
Well, because we are. So thank you, Richie. But we are big in Japan. And one thing that we have seen in, certainly, well, Richie will know this, in the various press rooms up and down the country, we've certainly seen a large Japanese contingent with coming in to see us. And our fan base over there is growing purely because Carew is getting minutes on the pitch and he's just been outstanding.
Yeah, he's. I mean, he looks to me like, I can't think of a Japanese player who's impressed me more anywhere at any club I've ever seen, frankly. And it's the interesting thing about that was that the USG people that I know in Brussels were saying that, you know, because obviously we didn't sign him from USG. He came from the J League, didn't he? We signed him and loaned him to us. And they would say, you've got an absolute dynamite player here. Incidentally, they're saying the same thing to some degree about Odingra as well. Although not to the same degree, but I mean, certainly, I mean, they're doing very well. They've got obviously the USG's sort of being bought by Tony Bloom has transformed their fortunes as well. I mean, this is the way, I mean, the money thing is just so all pervasive. I mean, if I was going to act as just a thought, not devil's advocate, really, given what's happening in Qatar, how long is this money go around going to continue? How long before it eats itself and collapses?
Well, I think the first thing in this country that's going to happen is come the day that Sky sort of like implodes on itself, isn't it?
Well, that's already happening to a certain degree. And like, unfortunately, the problem we're seeing with that is, I mean, this is a conversation for whilst that terrible tournament is happening. But the likes of Amazon, the likes of BT are even struggling. But I mean, the likes of Amazon, the likes of
what's going to happen is that all the while you've got more and more companies that actually want to fight for TV rights. And like I say, you've got, I mean, even YouTube had a little dip of the toe in there and thought that they could broadcast a few matches as well. And it got to the point where if you've got, hang on, about three or four broadcasters and you're each going to have to pay £25 a month to each of them, then something's going to give. So the only way it's going to, oddly enough, remain sustainable is if only you've got one or two broadcasters. I mean, that in itself kind of then becomes a bit of a sick joke.
Yeah.
Because they've got an effective duopoly.
Yeah.
And even then, Sky has the real sort of grind on it. And this is where we then come back to, well, New Year's Eve in this instance.
Yeah. The problem you're going to have with this, and this is the issue that they had, the issues that you have in Scotland, it's the issues that you have in Spain, where there's a duopoly, and you've got like Celtic and Rangers, you've got
duopoly of broadcasters, not of football clubs.
Yeah, but I mean, you've got those. But basically, when it comes to the negotiation of the TV rights, they get the lion's share of it. And that's the issue. And this is where things like the European Super League idea, the money men are trying to ruin the game. And some point, the game's going to ruin them because
the only way at the moment that the bigger clubs get more money is by finishing higher up the table. Apart from that, the money is spread fairly evenly. I mean, you might have it. Each club has got a minimum amount of times that are on the live on Sky. But that doesn't mean to say that, I mean, it was one time, and I think that they cocked up on the scheduling. And one of the clubs they realised was actually one game too few. And they had to sort of like really ramp them in and lose one of their big games on account of the fact they hadn't actually got their minimum amount of teams, you know, of broadcast games per team. Yeah. So, yes, they're going to get more money. The likes of the big six are going to get more money because they're going to be on the telly more often. But that's not a major thing in comparison. The main thing that's different is that the position you finish. Apart from that, the broadcast rights in this country are split evenly.
Here's a thought for you. After the business with Chelsea, I actually thought to myself, how would I feel if the Super League became a reality and all the big six just disappeared and left us with a really competitive Premier League to go along with really competitive other leagues? And although on a level as a football fan and someone who believes in the culture of the game, it will be repulsive. As a Brighton supporter, it will be absolutely brilliant. Because I love watching my team and I want us to win. And I don't like the feeling that there's a glass ceiling, which means we can't go any further. Because obviously from where we, and this is not something that any other club really would feel. I don't think, given where we've come from, we've come so far. People told us we wouldn't beat Archer, and now here we are in the Premier League. Why can't we win the Premier League? It's like, hang on a minute, where are we going?
But John, I completely disagree with that statement. Not the bit about Archer, obviously. But
What's your point?
I completely disagree with that. But for a pure and simple reason is that you've got, for instance, you've got the Liverpool fans, you've got the Arsenal fans, you've got the Man United fans. A lot of these guys are they're good people who work hard. They haven't got a lot of money, and you're telling them that their next away game is away at Barcelona and in the league.
No, he was talking hypothetically, which is why so many of those fans are so opposed to European.
Hang on a minute. And I did say that as someone who believes in the culture of football, I'm opposed to it. I wasn't saying for a moment. Yeah. It absolutely, you nailed it. I mean, I would not ever support it precisely for those reasons. But in terms of somebody saying to me, you know, your club is going to finish between 7th and 18th in the Premier League for the rest of your life, and you can expect for nothing more. That is not enough for me. And I mean, and for me as a fan, I mean, I went to a brilliant 4-0 win by Whitehall in the Din on Tuesday night, absolutely pissing down. 211 people there, making literally more noise than you hear at the Emirates. Absolutely brilliant. I'll be going on Saturday again. Obviously, because we now rarely play on Saturdays, I get the opportunity to go to more non-league games. Since Southwick collapsed, I'm going to Whitehawk and Worthing, and I've just been to Bangor when the Albion aren't playing, and I absolutely love it. I absolutely love it. It doesn't change my devotion to the Albion, but what I'm saying is there's another part of my soul which is kind of healed by actually watching the grassroots of the game, and I just wish in many ways that we could go back to how football was in the 1970s, when it wasn't, I mean, there was still a division, we know that, but it really, all the 1980s, when we came up and we were Liverpool's bogey team, and it was so much easier, there was more variation, and why can't the most capitalist system in the world, the US, in its top sport, American football, has a system whereby nobody wins the thing 2 years in a row because they get the draft picks from all the team at the bottom gets the draft picks from the top. That to me is a far more sensible system than what we've got. Yeah. I mean, that is the problem for me. It is, I mean, you know, I'm loving the way that we're playing. I'm loving the football. As I've said so many times, I feel like a goldfish owner who loves the goldfish as much as ever, but hates the water it's swimming in now. The fact that we're doing brilliantly, and it's fantastic. I'm absolutely loving it. It's wonderful. But that feeling that anything that we do, whatever we do now, it's just, okay, we'll have that one. We'll have that one. And that's what we're supposed to put up with. It's like that's how it is. So, you know, ultimately, if sport is not competitive, then is it sport? No, it's not.
No. And this is the point, isn't it? I mean, all the Chelsea fans come back to me and say, well, don't take it personally. It's just business. No, mate. No. First and foremost, it's a sport. And it's not as though we're looking at this through some kind of rose-tinted, Vaseline-smeared lens here. First and foremost, it's a sport. It's actually something that has such a great social significance above and beyond money. And I think it's that social significance.
It's more than sport, it's culture. Yeah. It is our culture. It is our culture.
I hate the noise. I hate the noise. I hate the noise around. I hate the whole money thing. But I can quite easily turn that off. And basically, when I go to the football, I'm going to watch my side, and I want my side to be successful. Exactly. And it's like,
absolutely. That is exactly how I have dealt with it, and it's absolutely correct the way to approach it. I said to myself, stop beating yourself about this, John. Just be an Albion fan like you've always been. Accept that we're playing great football, and just ignore the rest of it, and go and watch Whitehawk, and go and watch Worthing, and go and watch Bangor, and all the other teams that I'll go and see to make up for the bit that isn't there anymore for me because of the Premier League.
Yeah, I mean, this is the point. Any time, and I say this, any time I've been into the Amex, the 250, 300 times, whatever it is, that we've been to the Amex to watch the Albion, you know, for all those people that moan that we're now this corporate sellouts, when I go to the game, I can just actually switch off the whole corporate thing. I'm just thinking, where am I being, you know, bombarded? Yes, there's the advertisements that, you know, possibly, you know, that sometimes are a bit too invasive on the lighting, on the pitch side things. But I can go there and ignore the fact that this is sponsored by that and that is sponsored by that. You know, I'm going to go there and have a pint of Harvey's and have a Piglet's pie. And I'd have done that, whether it was the Amex or whether it was Falmer Stadium or whether it was, you know, Toys R Us Stadium or wherever it might be. I don't go there thinking, hey, I've got to behave like a corporate smarm here. I'm still going as a regular football fan
because still... we negotiated that because we ruffians negotiated the right to stand in the North Stand. I totally agree with that. That it's not about the Albion. We're one of the great shining lights of the game in terms of the continuation of the culture. And and what happened this week and the invitation that I got is absolute. And the way that Barber does and that they do sort of talk to everybody. You know, we're absolutely the exception. It's not about the Albion. It's about the game as a whole. It's about this monster that's become. It's about the fact that there are people who are not going to be able to, will have to choose between getting their homes heated and eating this winter while Mark Cucurella goes to Chelsea for £60 million. It is just completely wrong. I mean, it's on any level. It is completely, totally ludicrous and wrong. And it sucks the soul out of the game. And it's nothing to do with Brighton. It doesn't suck the soul out of my love of being a Brighton fan, but it sucks the soul. It's the water that the fish is swimming in that's the problem, not the fish. Yeah. The fish is brilliant.
Are we talking about the water that Fergal Sharkey is complaining about?
You can always change the water. And I just dream about all that hair product I could get for 60 million. I could have hair.
I have one more thing that I want to say, which is this. I think it may well be the case that because of our brilliant scouting system and our brilliant management system and the fact that we've swapped a genius for someone who appears to be going the same way, it could actually be that all these players that these big clubs want to cherry pick aren't actually quite as good as they think they are and actually are really good playing for Brighton, but actually going to fall flat on their arses going elsewhere.
I think that's where you're right, John, because it's all about the team. It's all about the team. And it's like, because Yves Bissouma, Mark Cucurella, they were part of the team. They weren't necessarily the big stars of the team, but they were part of it. And they were part of what made that team function.
I think...
If you take a cog from a Rolex and try and put it in a Seiko or a Casio from Elizabeth Duke, it ain't going to work.
I think the difference may well be that Brighton, all these players are used to being precisely part of an egalitarian structure where there's no stars there. And when they come up against stars in other teams who have egos and treat them in a different way, I think that may unsettle them and actually make it far more difficult for them to play the kind of football that they have been signed for, ironically, because they are operating in an environment with celebrities in it. I mean, celebrity culture is another thing that I can't stand. The poisonous, it used to be the case that you were celebrating for being good at something. Now you can be a celebrity, absolutely got no talent for anything, and just been on a game show or something.
Yeah, well, this is an argument which will rage long into the night. But that's all we've got time for. So thank you so much to John Bain. Thank you to Richie Mills. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Ailey Packham. This has been the Albion Roar in association with oldfootballshirts.com on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all again next week. I think I'm turning Japanese, I really think so.
Everyone avoids me like a psycho.